You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Footballs are literally in the air at Halas Hall, and we've got our first official update on the Chicago Bears' biggest roster competitions now that the pads are on. Welcome into the Locked On Bears podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm an analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I cover the Chicago Bears for Bears Wire. I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today, we will get a few updates from head coach Matt Nagy on what he saw from the first real practice with the Chicago Bears in pads. It's nothing definitive yet, but some early inklings on how both quarterbacks are doing and how the cornerback depth chart seems to be shaping up, with one of the front runners in particular starting a little bit from behind. We'll wrap up with the team's official announcement on the status of fans at Soldier Field and the possibility that maybe they could come back. I don't want to overdo it on this Bears quarterback competition because it's going to be the obsession and the talk of the town of Chicago for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks until the NFL regular season starts. But at the same time, it is the most important position on the team and the most important roster battle going right now. And one of the few teams, if maybe the only team in the NFL, with a true open quarterback competition right now. I'm even just trying to think off the top of my head. And there aren't really any other teams where it's so wide open as to no one really knows exactly who could be the week one starter. I mean, some of the other teams, there could always be some pushing here and there. You know, like with New England, everybody's expecting Cam Newton to start, but it's possible Jared Stidham could. But in Chicago, it's really, as much as anybody's guess, a 50-50 coin toss. But we're not going to get daily Bears quarterback training camp updates because not that much changes from one day to the next. But Monday was the first day that both quarterbacks were in pads for the first time all season. Everybody in Chicago in pads for the first time since the last regular season, throwing to receivers in pads for the first time. And it was our first real glimpse at what these quarterbacks can do in as close to some real situations as we're going to get before the Detroit Lions game. Matt Nagy spoke to reporters after practice and gave a few updates on what he saw and perhaps more particularly what he's looking for.
We try not to rush or get too crazy over any drop passes right now, whether it's on the offensive side or defensive side with a dropped interception. We really look right now for the decision-making. We're trying to test some things in regards to where those guys are at. And I thought the decisions were good. There were a couple drops out there, but this is the first time that these guys have had pads on since last year, whether it's your rookie in college or, being from college, or whether it's you're an NFL player that hasn't put it on for months. So that's going to happen. Now, if you get an opportunity to get another throw and catch like that the next day, we want to see you take advantage of it. So I think right now for us as coaches, digging into that tape and really critiquing what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong is going to be what's fun and get away from those Zoom meetings.
So Nagy didn't have anything specific to say about who's playing better, and it's only been one practice, and of course you're not going to get that from Matt Nagy at this point anyway, but I did think amid the nothing that he said for a lot of those words there is something that I think might be getting a little bit overlooked in this process, and that is in particular him going through the film and how much they're going to put emphasis on what they rewatch afterward and how difficult that makes it for us on the outside to get much of an accurate measurement of how the quarterback competition progresses. Like the media members that are there get a fairly, I would say, I don't want to say obstructed view, but it's a difficult view. It's a distance view of what's going on at practice. So they can get a sense of, okay, which quarterback looks like he's throwing better and which one is, you know, if one's throwing much more interceptions and incompletions than the other, that's the sort of thing that we can see and get some sort of glimpse of. But we won't be able to truly know and measure that decision-making process, that when it's the receiver's fault and not the quarterback's fault, and when they go back through and can kind of check the nuance on some of those things. And the other thing he said about, you know, not making the same mistake twice and getting a chance to make that same throw again the second day, that's not the exact type of information that we're privy to on the outside. So, you know, it's not as simple as chart their completion percentage at practice and whoever has the higher completion percentage wins. Because Nagy wants to see, okay, you missed the throw on Monday, come back and hit it on Tuesday. And standing on the sidelines and watching practice, you're not necessarily always going to be able to tell when it's the exact same play in the exact same route combination in the exact same spot, because it's not always going to be the same spot on the field, but it's the same throw and it's the same thing you're asking of your quarterback. But you only get that if you know the play call and we're able to watch the training camp all 22 tape, which of course we don't get access to. So all of that is to say, I think be careful with training camp updates on this quarterback competition. Unless it becomes painfully obvious to everyone watching who the better quarterback is, I don't think we're going to be able to get a sense between the two. As long as it stays close, anybody's guess and anybody's inkling is just going to be that, a guess and some speculation, maybe based on some solid foundation. But I think it bodes well for the Bears to be able to keep that secret. And Nagy said today that he wants to kind of stretch this out as long as he possibly can to make sure they have the most information and make the best decision on who will start against the Lions. The same general idea is true for all the positions in real roster competitions, but at least with some of those, we can get a more clear view of the depth chart and who's a little bit more favored than the others. Hear what Matt Nagy had to say about the cornerback competition in particular next on Locked On Bears. If there's one place that knows competition, it's rockauto.com, because their in-depth catalog has so many different parts available for your car or truck, and they put them all side by side. So you choose who wins the part competition based on the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. That's what's kept rockauto.com in business for over 20 years. They're a family-run operation based out of Madison, Wisconsin. They've been around forever, and they really know how to take care of their customers. You might not know that the chain auto parts stores actually will have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody, so don't spend up to twice as much for the same parts. Go to rockauto.com right now and see everything they have available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Besides the quarterback competition, I think the next most important roster battle going on with this team is that second cornerback spot opposite Kyle Fuller. It's so critical to have consistency in coverage nowadays in the modern NFL, when opposing offenses will spread you out and particularly focus on wherever your weakest link is in coverage. Much like the offensive line, you're only as good as your worst player on the back end, but at least on the offensive line, the guys immediately adjacent to them can help mask some of that, and you can do some different things with protections, which is why I'm more focused on the cornerback than even the right guard spot up front, because whoever that is going to be on the outside is going to be on their own quite a bit of the time, and you can't always just give them a safety to help in order to do the things that you want to do from a Chuck Pagano's perspective in play calling and pass rushing and blitzing and different coverages on the back end. You need consistency at that second cornerback spot to replace Prince Amukamara and make sure that there isn't that one glaring weakness that opposing offenses can attack. We've known for a while that it's going to be a three-horse race. You know, they signed Artie Burns as a free agent from the Steelers, a former first-round pick who kind of flamed out in Pittsburgh and never really lived up to the expectations of his draft slot. They brought back Kevin Tolliver, a former undrafted free agent who's really played well in limited opportunities, filling in for Prince Amukamara on the outside. And then the Bears added to it with Jalen Johnson coming in the second round as one of the more pro-ready cornerback prospects in this draft, a player that will likely prove to be a very good value for where the Chicago Bears drafted him here. But the first practice was an opportunity to see in what order they would get playing time, who would work with the first team, who would work with the second team, and who wouldn't have nearly as many opportunities as the other two. So far, it's been Artie Burns working with the first team and Kevin Tolliver working with the second team, and the opportunities somewhat few and far between thus far early on for Jalen Johnson, which should be expected given that he's the rookie coming in, the newest of the newcomers. Kevin Tolliver has experience in this defense. Artie Burns has experience in the NFL. But these few weeks of practices before the regular season will be the opportunity for their talent to really shine through and to sort of eliminate some of those other discrepancies between them and get the best, most talented cornerback on the field. And it feels like Jalen Johnson is going to be the most talented cornerback eventually. It's just a matter of when he's ready.
I think the biggest thing for the corner position is right now, again, it's trying to get an idea as to, I think every day might be a little bit different as we play more and more and they start getting guys in there to get a feel for what they can do well and can't do well. You know, Artie's first round draft pick has been in this league. He has experience. So just naturally for him to be able to come in here with Kevin Tolliver, I think that's normal. You'll probably end up seeing more and more reps as the days and weeks go on with Jalen, because again, we need to evaluate. That's a very important position that we need to get right. And you know, only time will tell with reps.
At the start of training camp, we had also heard from Matt Nagy and Chuck Pagano saying some similar things about Jalen Johnson and how all the rookies are going to have a more difficult time seeing the field early on this year because they didn't have the full rookie minicamps and the full OTAs before even getting to training camp and being able to truly compete for those starting jobs. So they're really playing from even further behind than they might normally be. I guess I shouldn't be that surprised that Artie Burns got the first crack, given a lot of what Matt Nagy said, experience kind of being the one big advantage for him over Kevin Tolliver. But at the same time, Artie Burns' last couple of seasons in Pittsburgh did not go great, to the point where he wasn't even playing that much. Like, he played a ton his rookie and sophomore year, or, you know, his first and second years in the NFL, but then the last two, almost down to, like, Artie Burns' level of participation. I think over 2018-2019, the two seasons that Tolliver and Burns were both in the NFL, Kevin Tolliver played 311 snaps, and Artie Burns played 375. So it's funny how it's almost not that different. I mean, he had about 2,000 snaps before that for Artie Burns, but he's been kind of down and on the sideline for quite some time, whereas Tolliver has been literally in this Chuck Pagano defense. So I totally get making Artie Burns the very first guy to get the first reps, even though it's going to be a fairly open competition in that regard. But I have to imagine, if I'm Kevin Tolliver, it's pretty motivating for me when this guy comes from outside of the organization, the guy who's the first-round pick, who's, and I don't want to say been pampered for being a first-round pick, but first-round picks get more leeway and more opportunity than other guys because of what, you know, the Steelers in particular invested in him. And Kevin Tolliver, coming in as an undrafted free agent, had to earn absolutely everything that he's gotten up to this point. So I could see where it might motivate me if I'm Kevin Tolliver. You know, rub me the wrong way, not in a bad way, not in a way where I'm going to be mad at the Bears and Matt Nagy or whatever and feel like I've been disrespected, but maybe feel a little bit disrespected and feel like, okay, you're going to make this guy ahead of me to start. I'm going to prove you wrong quickly. That's the motivation if I'm putting myself in Kevin Tolliver's shoes. So I'm really excited to see how this competition goes forward, especially with Tolliver seeing the team use a second round pick at his position. Again, kind of telling them, hey, we don't think you are good enough, or we're not sure that you're good enough at this point. And so that's all the motivation he should need. And it's a perfect opportunity for him to prove himself as ready to be an every down starter for the Chicago Bears. Easier said than done. Coming in with everything Kevin Tolliver has, he's been through a lot, he's shown some flashes, made some mistakes along the way, and it is going to be an uphill battle for him already from the start. But I do think the Bears have a nice mix of talent sets at this position, where I do feel like if Artie Burns doesn't work out, they have some options, and if Kevin Tolliver doesn't work out, they have some options, and if Jalen Johnson isn't ready, they have some options. But we'll see. They just need to make sure that one of them is a consistent starting cornerback for the full regular season. That regular season will at least start without fans at Soldier Field, but the team hasn't ruled out the possibility of maybe letting some people into some games when it's safe to do so. We'll go through the official announcement from the team and what it means for this season next on Locked On Bears. Given where Governor Pritzker's COVID-19 orders stand in the state of Illinois and what Mayor Lightfoot has done with the city of Chicago, we were all pretty well expecting there not to be fans at Soldier Field this season, but the Chicago Bears released an official statement on the matter Monday night after a day of fun training camp talk that kind of brought us back to some kind of normalcy with NFL football and practice and what August is supposed to feel like in the NFL. This was perhaps a sobering pull back into reality, and I'll read the statement for you as such. The Chicago Bears, Soldier Field's management partner, ASM Global, the Chicago Park District, and public health officials have worked together to assess whether a responsible plan that follows city, state, CDC, and NFL guidelines could be developed to safely accommodate a limited number of fans at Soldier Field this season. After discussing a draft plan with city health officials, the Bears and the city of Chicago agreed the health metrics show that it is not the right time to welcome fans back to Soldier Field. The health and safety of the city's residents and the fans of the Bears will always take top priority. The team and city will continue to monitor the environment and believe there can be a sound plan in place to bring fans back to Soldier Field once it is deemed safe and appropriate. Until then, Bears home games will not include in-person fans. I give the Bears credit for doing the right thing in this regard, even if maybe it wasn't fully their choice based on the laws and everything else going on in the situation right now. It would have been likely a heck of a fight for them to be able to even have fans if they wanted to, and some of this a little bit more outside of their control in that regard. But we're looking at a Bears schedule, at least the beginning of the schedule, with some empty stadiums. Of course, week one at the Detroit Lions, then it's home against the Giants at Atlanta, and then two home games, Colts and Buccaneers, before two more road games. So three of your home games come in the first 5 weeks, but then you get some road stretches mixed in there, and then over the final 5 weeks is another three home games with two on the road. So they're not one of these teams that gets stuck with a long road or home stretch that kind of allows these things to fluctuate. And if fans are able to come back in, you know, it would likely probably be more of one of these second half of the season type situations, which to some extent is almost when you need them more, right? I mean, if you had to pick a half of the season to not have fans, I think I would like to have them in the winter, especially when you're potentially gearing up for a playoff run and need some of those games to stay alive and to reach what you want to achieve as a team. So yeah, you know, you'd like to have them against the Giants, but you don't need them against the New York Giants. You'd like to have them against the Colts and the Buccaneers, but, you know, those are a lot of non-conference or not certainly non-divisional games that don't quite have the same juice and energy behind it. And maybe, you know, the Tampa Bay game being a primetime game would be the kind of thing that would be a lot of fun to have fans in the stands for, but it's not like it's, again, the most, not nearly as critical as, say, Week 17 at home against the Green Bay Packers. You might really need the fans in that one. Or even Week 10, Monday Night Football at home against the Minnesota Vikings, depending on how well the Vikings progress this season with the changes they've been through this offseason. Again, that could be a pretty key matchup for some of those division odds. As of now, we don't know for sure which road games will and won't have fans thus far. Some teams haven't made definitive statements either way. I know the Detroit Lions are one that everyone is expecting to have no fans, but the team hasn't officially ruled it out yet for that week one game. But I would bet between now and September 13th, we find out for sure that there won't be any fans in Detroit. Week three at the Atlanta Falcons, they've said they want to have capacity of 10 to 20,000 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but they have currently said no fans at least through September, and then they will decide later about games in October, November, and December. So Bears playing them on September 27th, just missing the cutoff there for the chance of maybe having some fans in one of those games. The next road game is week six at Carolina Panthers. The Panthers have not, as far as I can tell, have not said anything definitively about fans. Same with the Los Angeles Rams the week after that in week seven, October 26th. Then the next road game, November 8th, week 9 at Tennessee Titans, another team that hasn't said for sure either way. We're looking at about half the teams in the NFL have given an indication one way or the other. The Packers have said no fans for at least the first two home games, which for a lot of these teams likely means is going to be the case for the entire season. No official word yet from the Minnesota Vikings. And as of right now, I guess the one team that we have heard of that is planning on having fans when the Bears play them on the road is week 16 at Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars are planning on 25% capacity at home games as long as the thing sort of monitor properly on the health and safety front. They said they'll sort of be monitoring it closely after the season begins and see how it goes from there. So by week 16, it's possible that could change. But for now, it's looking very unlikely that there are no fans in week one. Won't be any Bears fans in week two. At Atlanta, won't be any fans. We already know for sure. And then it's two home games after that. So a minimum, it's looking like, of at least the first five games with no fans. And then I don't know what to expect from the Carolina Panthers in week six and the Los Angeles Rams in week seven. But it's going to be different no matter how it goes. Whether it's 25% capacity and it's 10,000 people in a stadium or it's zero, I wonder how much of a difference in environment it might be, especially if maybe teams try and pump in a little crowd noise or do something to try and replicate some of that environment and create some noise and volume within that stadium so teams can't hear absolutely everything the other team is saying. But it does bode well for road teams in terms of not having any of the negative effects of crowd noise. Think about the delay of games that can happen when there's miscommunication and trying to get the play call communicated while the crowd's being loud, or perhaps false starts when the quarterback's count isn't heard properly by the offensive lineman. You know, some of those different things like that might be able to be mitigated a little bit, and maybe that could give us a slightly higher quality of play. You know, it might be a little bit less sloppy if everybody's communicating a little bit more clearly, but I just hope they'll all be able to generate some of the same energy as they normally would. I think it's going to really call upon the leadership of each individual team and the strength of each individual locker room to have guys still have that juice out there. You know, that feeling that seemed to be missing at some points last season in this Bears defense in particular, when Danny Trevathan and Akeem Hicks were out and the defense just wasn't quite bouncing and, you know, really ramping it up the way we were used to in 2018. You're going to have to be able to generate that on your own, and it's going to be that much more important for guys like Danny Trevathan and Akeem Hicks to stay healthy and to be out there to keep that going for those guys, to keep them energized, keep them locked in and playing at their best. Either way, I hope you'll keep it locked in right here on the Locked On Bears podcast and subscribe on whatever app you're using to listen right now. That's the best way to keep up with all of our daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. We'll be bringing you every update we can from Bears training camp. Like I said, not going to try not to go overboard on the quarterback competition, only touch base on it when there actually is something new and important to add to the conversation that we haven't already talked about throughout this offseason. But there's a lot more going on with this roster than just the quarterbacks, and we'll have some time to look at the replacement plan for Eddie Goldman, how the safety competition is going, how Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet are fitting in at the tight end position, and so much more in the coming days and weeks. So I hope you'll follow along. I hope you'll learn something along the way. And I hope you'll get to bear down.